Back video. All right, so I guess we're good to go. It's 5 o'clock, and I know there's free beverages after this, so I'm sure everybody has had a long day, lots of interesting sessions, and is itching to kind of get on to something more fun. So I will try to make this hopefully as interesting as possible. So my name is Chris Patterson, and I am the program manager on the Visual Studio Cloud Services team, which is kind of the fancy name for all of the various developer services plus TFS that we work on in the developer division at Microsoft. And I look after Team Build and the build service on Visual Studio Online. And I've been doing that for about 2.5 years now. So before we get started, I want a quick show of hands of who uses Team Build today? Does anybody use Team Build? Wow, a lot of people. Okay. How many love it? Awesome. That's good. So, hopefully what I have to show you will make you like it a lot more than you currently do, and then over time we can make you actually enjoy working with it. So, I do ask that you submit an evaluation of this session afterwards. So there's a prize drawing and there's the QR code, and I'm sure you can find it in your build app of where to go submit the evaluations. All right, so a quick agenda. So I've got some kind of a real quick intro, and then we're gonna talk about why we've done a lot of the stuff we've done. I've got a whole bunch of demos and then some sort of nitty-gritty details on architecture and things like that. And if we finish up and have time, we'll obviously do some Q&A. So, whoops, wrong one. All right, hang on, I blew my big reveal. All right, so this is Visual Studio Online. I'll be doing all of my demos there, and this is what's listed as the build.preview tab. If you've downloaded the RC yet, which you probably haven't since it just came out, you'll see this in the on-prem RC, just listed this way. And then in a couple of weeks, you will see this also in your accounts in Visual Studio Online. So one of the big new differences, obviously, is I can now create a build definition in the web, which is so I no longer have to go and open up Visual Studio just to create a build definition. And for certainly cross-platform developers, that's a big deal. Additionally, you'll notice that the build definition is a lot simpler than it used to be. So what I'm going to do is go and grab my little console application here, and we'll just pick to build that solution. We'll save it. Sort of my cool def. Hit OK. You'll notice it actually popped up and asked me for a comment, which is a nice thing that we didn't used to have. Hit OK to queue it, and we get presented with a quite different screen than we used to. So one thing that is hopefully obvious here is XAML is gone within this system. So there is no Windows workflow. There is no giant XAML template to edit just to set up a build definition. You put together a pretty simple sequential list of steps that just run various tools and go from there. And so now we can see the agent has picked up the build, and we're actually getting real-time live console output from the agent running on a machine somewhere in Azure at this point. So anyway, so there's a quick and dirty how you create a new build definition. All right. So there'll be lots of other questions, I'm sure, later. So that's the quick intro to the new experience. So one of the things that you, it's obviously there is, it's completely new. There is no shared code with the current system. It runs side by side with the current XAML-based controllers. In fact, you see the language in the UI you'll see is XAML build for what was currently Team Build vCurrent as of yesterday, and then just build definitions for what we have going forward. And it is a big change. But we had a lot of reasons as to why we had to go that way. So, I've been doing this for a while now, and had a lot of conversations with a lot of different customers, and these are sort of some of the you know, things I get on a regular basis. They're like, so I just want to run a script after I run MS Build. How hard could that possibly be? Well, anybody who's customized a XAML template knows it's very difficult. So that's we got to fix that. Next one is, hey, do you have an integration with insert tool or service here? Whatever your tool of the day, scripting language, build tool, in you know, cloud service, whatever. And the answer almost always was no, because that company who wanted to do that had to go learn a very specific domain-specific language and then build a DLL that hopefully was linked against the right set of assemblies and then ship that to you somehow and then give you an explanation of here's how you go insert that in your workflow template. And some did. There are certainly some companies that did, but it was very difficult, and we wanted to make that process a lot better. Can I build my iOS and Android apps with TFS? Is anybody struggling with this now? Is anybody doing iOS and Android development and actually needs to build on, say, a Mac and can't do it? Okay. So we wanted to fix that. The next one was, what about my Java app? Right? A lot of the customers and a lot of the people who use TFS, they write big enterprise Java apps or something else. And you know, I could say, well, so go learn MS Build first and then sort of integrate that in kind of a strange way. And then yeah, you can kind of build your Java app. But it's not native, right? It doesn't feel right to them. It uses kind of this weird tool that if you're a Java developer, you don't want to go learn MS Build. It's not something you work on. This is always a fun one. So I get this every single release. It's, so I created a new build definition based on that new template, but we still use 2012 or 2010 or whatever it was, so I've got to make sure everybody has the latest release of Visual Studio just to edit the build template. Yep, sorry. It's what happens when you serialize an object graph and store it on a server, then try to deserialize it later, and maybe some of those types aren't there. So we had to fix that. And then this one's actually kind of close to my heart, because as you saw, we have that nice scrolling console view, right? That's your build log. It's exactly the same thing you would see if you ran that tool on the command line or catted the output of your tool into a text document, right? It is the log you would expect to see. It isn't sort of a weird mashup of an XML tree which has bits and pieces of the output you expect to see, which makes it very, very difficult to debug when something goes wrong. And that happens in build a lot. And then the final one, which is, I'm sure somebody's had this experience, open XAML template for the first time. You're kidding, right? So anyway, so there's a lot of the interactions that I've had personally with customers and internal folks, et cetera, on using Team Build. And for better or for worse, some people do like it. It obviously is very powerful, but certainly going forward, it is something we wanted to improve on. As we set out to kind of build this new version, I put some pretty strong principles forward to the team. One of the big ones, my number one one, was I don't want to create another build DSL. There's lots of them out there. There are great ones out there. There is MS Build, might not be great, but it's there. PowerShell, people seem to like writing builds in PowerShell. On the cross-platform side, you might use Gradle for Android development, or Xcode Build for iOS development, or Ant or Maven, or any one of a dozen others. But the point is that is your build. That should be your build. You can run that on your machine. You can open up a command prompt. You can open up your IDE, and you can run your build. When you sort of abstract away from that, which is kind of what happens with the XAML, you have this other DSL now, this Windows workflow XAML language that you have to learn, which abstracts you away and makes it very difficult to run your build on your machine. So I wanted to change that sort of overall premise. We have to support non-Windows platforms natively. We must have a native cross-platform story. And we have that, and we will take a look at that. I wanted to have an intentional extensibility model, meaning some very straightforward way for you or some tool vendor or the community to create a new tool runner or task for the system and deliver it in a way that you can install into your server and make use of very easily. And then that last one is my little pet peeve about the log. So anyway, those are some of the basics of why we started and how we went about it. So before I kind of go in and and talk about the details of how and some of the more interesting ones, I'm going to just go through some demos. So we kind of already saw the file new build my solution, and we'll take a little bit of a deeper look at what we did there. So like I said, I have my basic console app. I can go back, look at the build summary. Nothing particularly interesting on this one. But let's just go edit and add something to it. So that script example I gave. Well, I want to add running a batch script. So I'm going to go and pull up this gallery of plugins that we have. So a lot of interesting ones there. I'm going to pick the batch script one here, hit close. Simply move that up and say, you know, I want to run that just after tests run. And then I want to go pick this batch script that I've got in here. So we'll do that. So again, very simple, easy to set up. I could add additional arguments. There is a fair bit of inline help here. So hopefully it's easy for you guys to get going and work with. And then there's a few other tabs that we can walk through just to kind of get an idea of the experience. So that's kind of adding a new step to your build. If you click over, there is a repository. So here, there's a few interesting things listed. So there's Git, obviously, because this is a Git team project within Visual Studio Online. If you were in a TFVC project, you would see appropriate options there. We also have support built in for GitHub that you will see when this goes live on the service. And this is pretty cool because it actually integrates with the webhooks from GitHub. So you get CI for projects on GitHub in Visual Studio Online. So that's something that's interesting to you. Variables. So this is another kind of one of those nice things. I've lots of times people say, so I have this variable or this password, right? We have this password we need to use during the build, but where do I put it? So we fix that problem. And so I can just say my password. And then we'll just put foo, whatever here. And I'll click the little lock icon, and it'll mark it out as ellipses. And now that is stored encrypted at rest on the server. So you don't have to worry about anybody getting it. And when it's actually running and decrypted at runtime, we do everything we can to mask it out of the log. So it shouldn't be, somebody could always, there's always a way to copy a file somewhere. But at least in the normal course of usage, these things are well, reasonably well secured. Another big interesting change that people have asked for a lot is, you know, I've got a build definition set up, and I want to have multiple triggers. Right? Who has that problem? You've got like at least two different build definitions that do exactly the same thing that you need to keep in sync, but one is scheduled and one is CI. Raise your hand. Right? Yeah, that's a huge pain. So we fix that. And now I can set up and say, because this is Git, I can say, well, you know what? I want to include master, and then I'm going to include everything that is like refs, heads, star, or feature, star. So I want to make sure that every time a feature branch is set up, it gets the same build definition, just starts getting built via CI. So that's kind of nice. And you know what? I want a build to go off at 3 a.m., let's say, Eastern Standard Time for master. And then you know what? Well, let's delete that. And then I'd also like one to go off at 3 a.m., Tokyo Standard Time, whatever. So with the new flexibility here, I can have CI on multiple branches in the same definition. I can also have multiple triggers set up for multiple different time zones, schedules, on the same definition. So it gives a huge amount of flexibility and capability to your organization and to your developers. So that's kind of nice. And of course, popping up asking for a comment. Donovan's favorite feature. All right. So let that save, go over to the next tab. So other general information here. This is kind of what you would expect, is sort of just kind of a hold all for settings, but there's some nice things here. So listed here, I actually have two pools that are listed. We'll get into what pools are here a little bit later. So I can set up which pool I want my build to queue to. I can put some descriptions, build number format, you're used to that. This thing here is really interesting. So does anybody work in an organization where they sort of worry about the fact that the build agent is running in a process that has pretty broad access to your TFS service, right? You run unit tests in that, it can connect up. So we fix that. So the way this works is the build agent connects to your pool on the server via a credential, whatever the service account is running as, only has to have permissions to listen to that pool. That's it. So it's a very low set. And then we generate a time bomb token at runtime that is either project collection scoped, meaning that token has access to all of the sort of data within the project collection, or project scoped. So you can actually say, hey, this token can only read and write stuff out of this team project. And it's not available generally in the environment for processes that are executing. So there's really no straightforward way for somebody to say write a unit test that then creates a TFS connection and goes back and does something nefarious. So we've really tried to sandbox a lot of things there to make that just better for you overall. Timeout is pretty straightforward. Zero is infinite. You can set, this is for hung builds, right? If you want to say, hey, if the build ever runs more than an hour, something's wrong, so just go ahead and kill it for me. Badge enabled, this kind of goes with the GitHub thing. This is so you can get that little badge. Like if you're doing CI from VSO and GitHub, you can put the little badge there. And then the list of demands. Demands are there to let you control which agents in your system can run particular build definitions. So you might be familiar with tags. Anybody use agent tags kind of in the system today? Yeah, they're there. They've got some interesting problems because of the way the controller potentially schedules work on the agents. Well, the nice thing here is all this is handled by the server. It's much more complex. You can say, hey, does a value exist, or does a name exist, or does it even equal a value? So you have more flexibility. And you can use these demands to make sure like certain sets of build definitions are built on certain agents. This is kind of useful if you want to say you have a pool of 10 agents and you want to, you know, kind of say keep a set of them hot for a particular set of definitions. So you want to make sure that one definition always runs on one set of agents, so the workspace is all, or the repository is already synced there for you. So that's kind of nice. Retention policies. We've heard a lot of people that struggle with the number-based retention policy. Does anybody have that problem? The fact like it deletes my builds after 10. It's kind of a pain. So we changed it in this one. I'll be interested to hear broad feedback on this once people start using it. But now it's day-based. So you basically say, hey, I want to delete builds that are older the next days. Again, you have the same sort of filtering capability for branches. So you can say, hey, branches that are feature branches, I only want to keep those around for like 2 days. For master, we want 10. For release, maybe we want whatever, right? The other thing you can do is the administrator on your server can sort of set a total maximum retention policy that helps them keep it clean. So this makes sure that drops are cleaned up and the server data is cleaned up, and so you don't have people retaining builds forever unless they explicitly mark them as retained forever. So that's retention policies. And then the last one here is auditing, history. So it's been a common request to be able to see what changed in your build definition. So if you want to see what changed, you can just click on it and sort of see the diff view of what changed and who changed it. So anyway, so those are some of the kind of the high-low lights. I think we have some more interesting stuff. Just of like how to... We've taken, looked at, a lot of these come from the user voice comments, so I think 6 or 7 of the features we added are very, very high on the user voice request for team build, so I think we've done a lot to improve that. All right, so that's kind of the basic build my solution, basic definition. The next one I want to talk about is deployment. So I have this app that I've deployed, and if I go to Azure real quick. How many of you have tried to use the current sort of continuous deployment stuff from VSO? Okay. Yeah, it's works nice for small stuff, but it quickly runs into problems if you have anything more complicated. So earlier today, I have this app that I deployed, And it's a really simple one. It's not terribly interesting, but it does have two websites. Who's tried to deploy two websites from the same repository in the build definition? Has anybody successfully done that? Yeah. Anyway, so this morning I set up a build definition that does exactly that. So right here, I've got a normal build solution, which just builds my solution. And then I just added another invocation of MS Build to just package up the website, right? It puts the command lines in to say, hey, generate a web deploy zip for me and put it in this location. So if you, let's zoom in maybe on this a little bit. So if I go here and look at the end, there is just a variable package location. This variable we call build staging directory, which is a well-known variable in the system, Contoso web. So that puts it there. And then Contoso API puts it in a different location, which is kind of nice. So it's really simple to go set that up. So now I have two websites. Well, how do I want to deploy that? And the nice thing is you have a few different options. So right here you'll see I've added the Azure website deployment task. It's one of these tasks that's built in. And here lists the Azure subscription that I want to use for it, and I give it some other parameters. Well, one of the other sort of challenges we had with the previous system was, and people have generally had when deploying to Azure from an automated system, is how do I deal with the credentials, right? I've got either the certificate file I need to deal with, or if you're kind of more forward, you're using AAD or the stuff, and you've got like a user that you created, a service principal you created in your Azure Active Directory to handle automated stuff. How do I deal with that? So we actually added support into the system for something we just call service connections. And there's a few different ones. So right now there's Azure, Chef, and then generic. But the Azure one, when you bring it up, you just give it some information. You can give it your subscription ID, the subscription name, the certificate, or the credentials, right? You know, you can use the add Azure account and you can put in the credentials. This does that exact same thing. In fact, what this task that's here does is it just runs PowerShell. So is anybody using the Azure PowerShell commandlets for managing their deployments? Yeah. So I love it. I think it's great. It's easy to automate. It's easy to work with. So what we've done is this Azure Service Connection feature, what it does in the system is it just simply registers that Azure subscription on the machine as part of the automation. Then you can just run whatever PowerShell you want to. In this case, we've got a canned PowerShell script that is actually, you can see it because all of the tasks that are listed here are on GitHub and they're open source, so you can see them, which should make it much easier to debug or to extend in the future. So it's just a canned Azure PowerShell script right there that sets up the connection. You pick the website location, website name, which package, and go, and it runs the deployment. And then I just did a second one right there. In fact, if you wanted to go a little more complicated, well, not complicated, but a little more full-featured, and you had your own deployment script that you had written in PowerShell, you can simply just drop on the Azure PowerShell task. And again, pick your subscription that you want to use that's registered with the system, and then whatever script is checked into source control. So if you've already developed your app, whatever it is, and you have a PowerShell script that deploys your application, it's very easy to integrate those for sort of this nice continuous deployment system. All right. So that's how we're trying to make continuous deployment a little more awesome. I would go run these, but they take like 3 minutes, 4 minutes to run, so it's not as interesting. So the next thing that everybody asks me is, so I've deployed my app and I would really love to smoke test it, right? I want to do some sort of poke it with a web, just poke the web endpoint to make sure it's up and running, right? Have that problem? So we've added into the system a cloud. So is anybody familiar with the cloud load testing service in Visual Studio Online? Does anybody used it? Okay. So we actually have great integration with that as well. So coming here with the system are tasks for just running cloud load tests. And in this particular case, let's just go ahead and queue this guy real quick. This is a cloud load test that just, what they call a a new system they call like Quick Perf Test. And basically, all it does is you give it a URL that you want the load test to hit. You give it a user load and a duration. And they'll just kind of generate a web test and a load test on the fly in their system for you that just pings that URL. So you can see here, it went ahead and got sources, and it's now streaming data back. And eventually, it will finish up, and we'll be able to see the results. And we can take a look at that in a minute. So I could have taken this task pretty easily and just added it to the end of my build, and I would have the ability to run a load test very straightforward as part of my my continuous deployment build. All right. So that's continuous deployment becoming more awesome. And if you go to Donovan, do you already have yours?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a session, what was the name of it? So there's a session, cross-platform continuous delivery. If you didn't go to that, you can watch the video. There's stuff that's going to make it even better in future updates coming to VSO and TFS. So that was basically integrating cloud load tests. And then the other thing I wanted to show you that's pretty cool about this is, so by default, this task is going to look and say, okay, I know I'm attached to a VSO account, so I know I can just run a cloud load test, right, because it's part of my VSO account. But what if you're using TFS? Right, you've got TFS on-prem. Would it be nice to potentially take advantage of the cloud load testing service integrated in? Well, so you can see here this advanced section in there, which is poorly named. We need to fix that. But basically, what you can do here is you can give it a URL for your VSO account and some credentials, and it will use that to connect up and queue up a cloud load test against whatever app. So even if you're on-prem, you can use the cloud load testing service to test your app that you deployed from your on-prem server. And it all integrates together really nicely. And there's a bunch of other stuff. So if I kind of go look here at some of the other test tasks, so there's ones for actually deploying the test agent to multiple boxes and running distributed tests, obviously regular Visual Studio test. There's a Xamarin Test Cloud one, which we'll get here in a minute. And more will show up over time. So this system is really extensible. It's very easy for us to add features to it and help you take advantage of them. All right, so what's next? Oh, let's go over here and take a look at the Mac. All right. Okay, so here I have my Mac, and I've got the cross-platform agent running. As part of our commitment to making sure we can build everything you need to, we have an agent that is written in Node.js that is also open source that runs on other platforms, non-Windows platforms. So we actually, I had a guy set one up on a Raspberry Pi. I thought that was really interesting. Not sure Raspberry Pi is going to be the best build agent, but hey. We've got some people that deployed them in Docker containers. In fact, one of the things we want to do and will do closer to RTM is actually put out a Docker container image, a base image, with our agent on it. So if you're using Docker, you can easily spin up agents on your Linux machines. And of course, it runs fine on a Mac, which is what I have it running here. And that's also available on GitHub there. But anyway, using the new template, just the very basic right here Xcode build template that we ship out of the box, I set up my build for this little iOS application, and the tests as well. Now, in this particular deployment, test publishing is not there. I need to pick the right pool. Sorry, the hosted pool does not. Oh, so that was actually interesting that I should have shown that to you, but I'll show it later. The pop-up came up and it blocked me from queuing this build to a pool that didn't have any machines that were available, had no Macs in that pool. It was just the hosted pool that only has Windows machines currently. So that's kind of how the demands work. So this particular build definition demands Xcode. All of the agents publish a bunch of capabilities of what they can do. And so the system tries to make sure that you don't inadvertently route a build to an agent that can't handle it. So if I queue this guy up, I can bring up the little agent here just to show it's real. And you can see the agent running, starting the build. running through building our Xcode project and Xcode test. What we decided to do, and now tests are popping up and launching, of course, on the simulator. So there was my test. Not super interesting, but hey, it's there. We actually, by default, if you install XC Tool, which is a utility that actually Facebook develops, it gives you much, much prettier console output. And also, we'll publish your Xcode test results to a JUnit format, which we now natively understand and can import into the test result system. So you get kind of complete integration of that build, run unit tests with your iOS builds now as well. All right. So we're moving through pretty quick. All right, so let's go back to here. All right, so we're back up. Okay, so what do we do? We've got building a solution. We've taken care of a bunch of the difficulties. Hey, you want to run a script. You want to add something to your build. That's easy. You got multiple schedules, multiple triggers. You have history, better retention policies, lots of significant improvements. And so that should make things really nice. But what if you want to sort of take full advantage of other services? Remember I talked about, hey, do you have integration with service X? Well, one of the things that you will see that's, I'm not sure if it's been announced by Xamarin or not, but we have done work with Xamarin, and they did a lot of the work to integrate, make building Xamarin-based apps really easy in this new system. So this is an example of a Xamarin Android app. And it actually, there's also a template, Xamarin.android, Xamarin.ios, right here for setting up. And it just sets up and builds my basic solution. It takes care of things like, and the nice thing is this actually will work with our hosted build service as well. So when you use the new build system with the hosted pool, you can all of the Xamarin tools are pre-installed there, and we will keep them up to date along with Xamarin. So you can actually start taking advantage of even that service with your Xamarin Windows and Android apps. We don't have Macs in the hosted pool yet. We'll see over time if that happens. But really simply, you set up. You know, you have your Xamarin license you have to activate. So license activation is right there integrated in, so you don't have to do any funky stuff on the build machine. You just put in whatever the appropriate account is for license activation. We build, restore NuGet packages, run MS build, and then Xamarin Test Cloud. And here I actually went up. All I had to do was go up in the Xamarin Test Cloud and create a device, right? I had to create an app. And it gives me all of the information. There'll be a tutorial coming out on this. But I just put in my API key, which again is nicely stored here as a hidden secret variable, so we don't see that. Give it the device. I tell it which series. I tell it where the test assemblies are. And it's going to go ahead and take care of that for me. So I can go and queue this build. And this one does really take a little while because it's doing a bunch of stuff. But when it's done, and you go up and look at your Xamarin Test Cloud account, you can see right here all of the nice test details. I can look at this particular run, which I ran early this morning. It gives me this really nice kind of view as to what failed. I can click in here, and I can see that, okay, so I had a failed step here. So what I really want to do is log a bug in VSO. For my failure. So complete integration end to end. So you set up and run. We can run your tests. We can run your tests by integrating well with the Xamarin Test Cloud on multiple different devices of different types, different form factors, different OS versions. And then when you get failures, it's really easy to pipe that data back into your software development process in VSO by just simply logging a bug. So really trying to help build out that ecosystem and make your tools easier for you to use. And so that's our Xamarin cloud integration. So currently it's going through an activating license, and we'll finish that up at some point. And then finally, we talked a bit about Java. So in here, I've got a little to-do list, which is a Java app. And it just runs Maven, because that's what I use to build this Java app. But the other thing here listed is published test results. And currently in team build with XAML, if I want to run some other unit test framework, right, I've got to sort of either get an adapter for the Visual Studio Test Runner system or kind of somehow get it jerry-rigged in. And then I've got to figure out how to turn the XML from that test framework into this TRX thing, which is a very interesting format as well, to get it kind of published up so I get that nice integration. Well, with this new extensibility model and system, we're opening that up to make it a lot easier. So here, you can see I've got support for easily publishing test results from a JUnit XML, an InUnit XML, a VS Test, TRX, of course, and then XUnit is coming up shortly. So it makes it very easy for you to basically take and run whatever test framework you want. Because almost all of them, whether it's Mocha or Cucumber or some other sort of interesting test framework for some other platform, all of them pretty much boil down to generating JUnit, InUnit, XUnit, and well, for us, it's TRX, but it makes it very easy to integrate those things in so you can publish those test results. And of course, when they run, if I go back and actually look at one of these builds, right on the summary page, I get a list of all of the test results there. I see, of course, the commits. I can click on that. It's going to open up this test run for me in the Test Run Explorer in VSO now, instead of having to go to Visual Studio, and start to actually give me some nice analysis and details of what happened in that test run and what passed, what failed, et cetera, very easily. All right. And so that is kind of the gist of what we built, right? It's much more extensible, it's much more open, should be much simpler, and should be very, leave the power in your hands to work with largely the tools, the frameworks, the languages you want to work with, but we're just going to run it. All right, so let's go back to PowerPoint and talk about some of the details. So we already talked about no new build DSL, right? So this is actually, you'll notice the UI today is a little bit different than this when I took this screenshot a couple of months ago. But it is a broad set of various different technologies that will continue to grow, both from us. I don't know if you saw when I had it up, there was one for deploying to Chef. There's a Docker task in there. So really making it available to integrate with the tools that you use today. So my tagline there is, don't make me learn yours, just run mine. Native cross-platform. It's a Node.js-based agent that runs on macOS and Linux. Primarily, we've tested on Ubuntu. So we'll, over time, we'll keep testing on other frameworks. But it basically runs wherever Node runs. And so far, that's been pretty good. We have lots of out-of-the-box support for common technologies that you use on various different cross-platform frameworks. And of course, it's open source, so you can go see it. We will be taking contributions if you so feel inclined to fix a bug or implement a feature. So that's really good. Extensibility. The first place I focus on extensibility is, you saw it's really easy to add a task to say run a script, right? Hey, run a PowerShell script, run a command script, run some random exe that integrate with. We set a whole bunch of environment variables for you to make it easy to get information like what's the build number, what's the agent name, what is the, I don't know, the TFS URL if that's something you want to know. But a lot of those things are set as environment variables, so makes it easy to grab from your script. We monitor exit codes, and we even have some formats that you can use to send other information to the system, to update the build number, to log progress, to write to publish an artifact. So if you want to, say, run a script that creates some file that you want to then have uploaded to the drop for you automatically, there's a very easy command, we call it, that you can, which is just a standard out string that you can pass to say, hey, publish this file as part of the drop for me, and we'll take care of it. However, if you do want to do some extensibility or or integrate some service. The model is basically a JSON file with a script that you create a zip from and upload it to the server, and that's automatically distributed to all the agents. Right, so it's very straightforward. In fact, the agents themselves sort of auto-update in that same mechanism. So as new agent bits get published to the service or your server via updates, all the agents in your build lab will automatically restart themselves and update themselves to the latest bits. So that saves you from having to go out to 100 build machines and go install them. All of our tasks are open source out there. We haven't figured out the contribution model for that yet because sort of the list in the GitHub repo is what we're shipping in the box. There's a talk on VSO extensibility, TFS extensibility as well coming up that Will Smythe is doing. I think you should, if you're interested in that, you should go to that because while our specific extensibility for the tasks is what it is, the way you package and deliver those for consumption will be very heavily, obviously, based on that whole extensibility model. So that will be interesting for you to see as that comes around. And then, as I mentioned, the implementation right now is on the Windows side. You implement your task as a PowerShell script. So you throw a PowerShell script. Maybe you have some commandlets in a DLL. You just put those in the zip file, and there you go. And you can run that, and we give you access to something called the distributed task context, which has a bunch of other data and methods on it you can use for doing sort of more interesting integrations than you can do from just a raw script. And then on the cross-platform side is actually JavaScript. Some interesting discussions about whether or not we kind of sort of unify all that around probably JavaScript, but we'll see over time. Of course, don't hide your log. Look, I just want to see what the output is there. So I can debug my problem. All right, architecture. So do any of you actually try to manage a build lab with build controllers? Does anybody have problems with the fact that a controller only connects to one collection? Yeah, so we fixed that. So architecturally, the new build stuff runs side by side with XAML builds. That means when you upgrade to TFS 2015, all your controllers keep on working. Even your 2010 controllers keep working. So those are there. If you happen to have some 2010 controllers for building on Windows XP, which is primarily why people have them, those keep working. Your 2012 controllers keep working. And the 2013 ones keep working. And then, of course, you can add new 2015 ones, VS 2015 ones if you like to. But they're still there. And so we didn't break anything from that perspective. However, with the new system, we significantly changed the way it works, and we got rid of that physical controller agent model. On the surface, that's kind of a nice model for certain things, but it brings up a lot of problems like, well, if I have this single controller, and the primary way I connect to TFS is, the collection, you sort of end up with that one-to-one mapping. You also end up with a problem of the controller is not highly available. Has anybody lost a controller that's got like 50 agents on it and a whole bunch of builds running and they all get killed? Yeah, that's a huge pain. So we fixed that problem. So agents work in pools. Pools are defined at the deployment level. So you deploy a TFS server with a bunch of application tiers. If you're doing a highly available setup, you can go to the server control panel, and I'll pop over to a machine and show you that. And you can define multiple pools. An administrator can, by default, the team foundation administrators, the sort of server admins, have access to create pools. There is a group you can be added to that gives you the ability to create pools at the server level, but nothing else. So you no longer have to give somebody kind of pretty high privileges just to manage the build machines. Further, once you create a pool, you can actually assign administrators at the pool level. So you if you work on TFS or if you admin TFS and you've got a bunch of different teams and you want to give them different pools, you can assign somebody from that team the ability to administer that pool and only that pool. So they can add agents to it, remove agents to it, manage that, but they can't do anything else with it. So the security and sort of that management is a whole lot better. And as I mentioned, the agents are Xcopy deployed and auto-updated from the server. So basically, there's a button on the admin page where you download the agent, you unzip the file, you run a PowerShell script to configure it, it's up and running, and from then on, it just auto-updates itself. as the server updates. Here's a picture. It kind of looks like this. This is a really crazy one where I've got machines that I'm sharing with. They work side by side. So I can have a machine with a XAML agent and controller running on it. I can add one of the new build agents to that same machine, no problem. There's no interaction. And so I have a lot of different capabilities there. Security. So I mentioned that scoping on the build definition. Each build, when we run, runs in its own process. Has anybody run into a phenomenon with the current agent where a file handle gets left open for some reason in the build host process and you have no idea why? Yeah, that's a problem too. Because builds do a lot of things. I mean, they write files, they read files, they create semaphore files. I mean, they're a really interesting operation. So what we do is every build that gets run gets a new worker process that the agent spins up, and it runs that build. And when it's done, it kills that worker process and creates a new one for the next one. So any state, any environment variable set, any file handles open, anything like that are completely contained to that worker process. So things should be much more robust from that perspective. And we've seen that internally in our own usage. And then, of course, I mentioned the pool administration delegation. And then each build also gets its own unique access token that's time limited. So the build starts up. We create a connection back to the server for writing logs and drops and things like that back up. That is only held within that worker process. That's not available as an environment variable. It is available to tasks. So if you have a task you've created, you can get access to that connection. We sort of view that as a trusted part of the system. But just somebody running some exe, running a PowerShell script or whatever, doesn't have the ability to easily create a connection back to TFS or get access to those credentials. So we think we significantly improved that overall situation. So really quick, let's pop back here. Hello. Where is it? VGA. There we go. And I'll show you sort of the administration. So as I mentioned, so this is a VSO instance. I have to have two pools listed. So one of them is the hosted pool. And it's so this is a sort of a special pool because it's one we provide in our pre-provisioned VMs. And while you won't see this feature right away, later on in the year we'll enable it. You notice that you actually have two agents. I happen to have two agents listed here. So currently today in the hosted service, it's a little difficult to run builds, multiple builds, because they get serialized behind each other. With the new architecture, we're going to be able to enable a feature where you can actually have multiple agents in the hosted pool, so you can actually potentially use it as a much more real solution. But my default pool here that I created, if I expand that, I can see I've got an agent pool administration group and then an agent pool service accounts group, which I happen to be in both of those, but that's fine. But I can then go and I could create additional pools, so I could do a new pool here because I happen to be a global admin. I could delegate administration, and if I want to install the agent, I can just click on that and download the agent and configure it on my machine, and I'm off and running. And then once I've done that, so if you think about a TFS instance, you probably have multiple collections. So once you create a pool at the deployment level, at the server level, you can then say which collections can use that pool. So not every collection can use every pool by default. So once you go do that, if you go to the collection administration page, there's a build tab here, and I can see a list of, we call them queues at the collection level, except they are, this is where the builds queue. But I can see that in this collection, I actually happen to have both pools. But I could only have one, and somebody else might have a different one. So the ability to manage your build resources, to balance your build resources across many different machines, many different teams, many different collections is significantly improved under this new architecture. And I think that is kind of the end of the overview. So download the bits, take it for a spin. Your VSO accounts will get the new build preview when you first see it, but shortly thereafter will switch to just be the build tab. So the build tab will be the new experience with both new builds, XAML builds, all the web editing, everything in your accounts in a couple of weeks. So we have a deployment coming up in 2 weeks. So shortly thereafter, you will see all these new features. And of course, you can see them in the RC. So if that's it, there any questions? So if you go to the mic, please, that would be super helpful. So they can get them on the video.
I didn't see, but I was hoping, do you still have gated builds?
Okay, so gated, that's an interesting question. So obviously the XAML system had actual gated builds for TFVC. With the new, one of the new features coming with TFS 2015 is pull requests. And then as part of pull requests, we have policies. And one of those policies is build. So in the same feature will eventually come for TFVC, right? So with a pull request, you can set up from branch, feature branches to master, nobody can push to master, right? You can push to a feature branch. To get to master, you have to open up a pull request, and that has to be code reviewed. And then I have a build definition that has to be run and passed before that can be let through. So that is the same kind of thing as gated, though a little bit different, because gated, as you think about it, TFVC, does not really work for Git at all. We currently do not have traditional gated for TFVC yet, but a very similar policy method, probably based around shelf sets, which is actually how gated works, will be coming, and that's how we're going to implement gated in this new system. Versus the way we do it today is a little bit strange, because we kind of reject the check-in, and then you shelve, and it creates some interesting problems. So this new extensible system will mean that instead of just having potentially one gate on any check-in, you can have multiple gates, I think, which will be is much more flexible for you. Other questions? Come to the mic, sir.
Is it still possible to get code coverage data?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, the same data exists for tests. So code coverage data is run, it's pushed up. You just don't see it there because at the point of this deployment, the APIs, the REST APIs for getting code coverage data weren't complete yet. Mm-hmm. They were actually checked in yesterday, I think. Okay. So you'll see that. So same code coverage.
Okay, and is that just C# or does that support like Cobertura coverage reports?
So currently it is just based on the R code coverage, but I've given strong feedback to the team that sort of that coverage XML or the Cobertura sort of rough standard needs to be supported as well. Okay. So I expect to see that at some point.
All right, just a question about retention policies.
Yes.
Would there be a scope to add a feature of retention by size?
Retention by size.
Like, I've got a terabyte of space.
Okay.
Keep it up until that point.
I see. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it, but thanks for the, yeah, that, I'll take that feedback. And
like, you know, you do a lot more builds closer to the end of the project, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Does the cross-platform tool that you demoed on the Mac support Apache Cordova?
Yes. So we can support in a couple of different ways. They're actually the Cordova tools for Visual Studio. When all of this goes out live, we have a really great tutorial on how to set that up. And yes, you can build your one app with that Cordova platform on Windows and on Mac and produce, you know, one package up, a package for each platform. And that works. It's actually really cool. So I work pretty closely with the guys who worked on that, and we made sure that was a good experience. Yes?
If we need to use a compiler that's not supported by one of the tasks, for example, a TI firmware compiler or something along those lines, how difficult is it to get that set up? And will it be possible to do that in a hosted pool?
So it depends. How do you, what's your make? So, I mean, you have the compiler and you have the make system. What make system do you use to run that compiler?
I don't know.
Okay, so, you know, there's lots of different ones. I consider MS Build a make system. Ant, Maven, those kinds of things are a make system. So typically compilers are integrated via some sort of make system, and then integrating that is very easy because all of our stuff, if you look at the open source repository, is basically boils down to taking some parameters, building up a command line, and launching that command line. And from the standpoint of the hosted pool, if your compiler is deployable via some sort of xcopy mechanism, then yes, that would work. We don't have current support for like installing custom software that requires elevated privileges or anything like that.
Okay.
Is there still the 255 character path limit in the new build system? Well,
not on Mac. So, yes, there's really nothing I can do about that. We do have some interesting, there was a very interesting bug that came across a couple weeks back, because Lodash, which is a node module, creates some very interesting, very long, very deep paths. And so we've done work to make sure we can at least delete those via the native Windows APIs, but we can't support, you know, really building more than 255 because so many tools just don't support it on Windows. Yes?
So I saw with the deploy, it had the capability for what looked like web deploy and running of arbitrary commands on the target machines. Is there any build tasks available for, say, if we were producing MSI packages or even, you know, EXE-based installers or anything else like that?
So we don't have anything out of the box, but if you go look at the video of the Donovan session, that those some of the new deployment stuff coming there is better. I mean, in the end, MSI is a little weird because you kind of need to get onto the box to run that MSI. And it's really just MSI exec against that MSI. So there's no reason there couldn't be. It would be very easy to write something that does that, but it's not something we've done yet out of the box. But it's a good idea. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, the example was write a PowerShell script that just does start process and goes.
So we use extensively coded UI and lab management. Is there a test build how's that incorporated?
So which part specifically?
Well, there's a traditional test build the old Visual Studio, or this one, how does that correlate?
Okay, so the old, the XAML template there is, the lab, you're talking about the lab template? Is that what you're talking about?
That's correct.
Yeah, so we, at this point, there is not a direct correlation. Some of the release management stuff that's coming in the future actually is the future of doing those sorts of operations. That'll be much better for that. The one thing you did see is we have the distributed test running, so you can sort of point that at a bunch of machines and say, hey, go run these tests on that machines. But the exact equivalent to lab management is not fully integrated yet, but it is on the train that's coming.
Great.